Thank you very much. We're going to call the full city council meeting back to order. If you're just joining us, we've already done roll call, the salute to flag, executive communications, general communications, and we had the acceptance of the minutes. So now we are moving on to number one on the agenda, announcements of appointments. For the Board of Safety, Councilman Gephardt.
So for the Board of Public Safety, Charles Benson. For the board, the Building Board of Appeals, Robert Arp. For the Planning Board, Ashley Inicelli Cuyon. For the Tree Warden, Carlos Pinero.
Thank you very much. Those were announcements of appointments. Those were appointments that were made by the administration that did not require a council confirmation. We are now moving on to number two on the agenda this evening, which are appointments requiring confirmation. First off is the Board of Public Safety Committee Report. Councilman Gephardt.
I have the Board of Canvassers, yeah.
Board of Canvassers.
Board of Canvassers,
sorry.
Stephanie DeMergerin, committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Foley.
Favorable action.
Second by Councilman Gephardt. Any questions on this appointment that was not asked earlier this evening? Hearing done, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser? Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Nine yes, appointment passes.
Thank you, and congratulations, appointment. Next up, Sewer Board of Review, committee report, appointments.
Next up, Anthony DiBella to the Sewer Board of Review, committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Gephardt.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Any questions that were not asked earlier this evening? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser? Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Nine yes, appointment passes.
Thank you, the appointment passes. Next up is the Tourism Advisory Board, committee report, appointments.
Samantha Ehrlich, and committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Gephardt.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Any questions that were not asked earlier this evening? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Nine yes, appointment passes.
Thank you, the appointment passes. Next up is the Wildlife Commission, a committee report, appointments.
Cynthia Quillick, the committee recommends favorable action.
Can you move that for me, Councilman Gephardt?
I move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Any questions that were not asked during the appointments committee earlier this evening? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Nine yes, appointment passes.
Thank you, the appointment passes. Next up is the Zoning Board of Review, committee report, appointments.
To the Zoning Board of Review, Mr. Robert D. Gloria, committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Gephardt.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilwoman Travis, Councilman Howe, Councilman Foley, Councilman Lattiser. Any questions that were not asked during the appointments committee earlier this evening? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Yes. Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Nine yes, appointment passes.
Thank you, the appointment passes. Number three this evening is the consent calendar. Number one is PCR 1-22, resolution relative to bids. Committee report, finance.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howe.
Favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Bid 2022-259, ammunition. Bid 2022-288, SOFO software service renewal. Bid 2022-289, Adobe software license renewal. Bid 2022-281, TeamViewer software maintenance. Bid 2022-080, workstations, laptops, tablets, printers, copiers, and computer peripherals. Bid 2022-282, purchase tablets and docking stations. Bid 2022-260, mobile thermal printers. Bid 2022-283, Shanix card reading system upgrade. And that concludes the approved on the consent calendar, Mr. President.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions on the consent calendar? Okay, can we move to number two, PCR 2-22, resolution relative to abatements. Councilman Howe.
Move favorable action with an amendment.
For action, Councilman Howe.
Move favorable action with amendment.
Second by Councilman Foley. Go ahead, Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. There was a request to pull former 11658. And so therefore that brings PCR 2-22 new amount to $17,541.92.
Okay. Are there any questions on that amended amount for the abatements? Okay, so we're going to take a vote on the amended amount first. So are there any questions one more time on the new amount for the abatements? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll on the amendment.
Alistair?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Yes. Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes to amend.
Thank you. The amendment passes. Okay, now we are going to take a vote on the full consent calendar, which was PCR 1-22 and PCR 2-22 as amended. Are there any questions on the consent calendar that were not asked earlier this evening in the Finance Committee? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action. Well, I need a motion.
Mr. McAllister?
Hold on. I'm sorry. Yep, sorry. Clerk will call the roll. Favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes, consent passes.
Thank you. The consent calendar passes. Councilman Howe, I believe a number of items have been removed from the consent calendar.
Yes, Mr. President. We have 6 items. I'll begin with the first. Bid 2022-270 Alpha. Original equipment manufacturer's parts is now PCR 622. The action was to hold until January 19th.
Okay, PCR 622 will be held to 1/19/22.
Formerly bid 2022-270 Bravo, original equipment manufacturer's parts for various vehicles. The request was hold till January 19th, is now PCR 7-22.
Thank you. PCR 7-22 will be held to 1/19.
Formerly bid 2022-255 Alpha various replacement automotive parts is now PCR 8-22 and requested to be held by January 19th.
Thank you. PCR 8-22 will be held to January 19th.
Formerly bid 2022-255 Bravo various replacement automotive parts is requested to be held by January 19th is now PCR 9-22.
Thank you. PCR 9-22 will be held to January 19th.
Former bid 2022-261 fertilizer liquid weed control and lime was requested to be held till January 19th is now PCR 10-22.
Thank you. PCR 10-22 will be held to January 19th.
The final one, Mr. President, is PCR 11-22, the former item that was in the abatement, item number 11658, in the amount of $415.20. Move favorable action.
For action, move favorable. Do we have a second? Second by Councilman Foley. Any questions on this? It has been pulled out. Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action. Yes.
Mr. Foley? Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi?
Recused.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes, 1 abstention.
Thank you. The motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are now moving to the unfinished business on the agenda. First up is PCO 37-21. This is for second passage, committee report, ordinance.
Committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Gephardt.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Howe. Any questions? And Councilman Lattiser. Any questions that were not asked during the committee earlier this evening? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action on second passage.
Ms. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes, second passage.
Thank you, second passage. Number two this evening is PCO 38-21. This is for second passage, committee report ordinance.
Committee recommends favorable action.
For excuse me? We're having a meeting at this time. Councilman McElroy, would you like to make a motion for favorable action, a second passage on PCO 38-21?
Yes, favorable action.
Second by Councilman Howe. Any questions from the council that were not asked during committee earlier this evening? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes, second passage.
Thank you. The motion passes. Up next is PCO 15-19 sub A, an ordinance relating to health insurance for city's employees. At this time, I'd like to call on the council solicitor, Mr. Walsh, on PCO 15-19 sub A.
PCO 15-19 sub A comes to us with a recommendation this evening from the ordinance committee for unfavorable action with discussion. I've been asked to address the various legal concerns that have been raised throughout the committee's consideration of this item over the past couple of years. The proposed changes to Section 220 of the Code of Ordinances that are presented in PCR 1519 Substitute A raise a few concerns. The city solicitor, Mr. Asillo, has provided a legal memorandum outlining in detail many of these concerns, and I do concur in his findings that the changes presented in the proposed ordinance present potential violations of the statutory obligation to negotiate and bargain in good faith, which could lead to an unfair labor practice complaint, as well as potential violations of Supreme Court's, Rhode Island Supreme Court case law that prevents councils from binding its successors, as well as the potential for litigation related to breach of contract and constitutional due process and constitutional takings clause violations as it relates to the changes to the retiree healthcare benefits. With these potential concerns, it's my recommendation that the council take, you know, all of these items under advisement as it considers whether or not to proceed with this proposed set of changes.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. So, per advice of our council, council solicitor and the city solicitor, the language in PCO 15-19 sub A it is not something that the council has the authority to implement. I'm happy to have the discussion on the floor, but I will be recommending to the members of the council that we follow the committee's report, which was unfavorable action, as I do not believe this is something that the council has the authority to take up. But I'm happy to open to the floor for discussion. But first, let's move it and get a second. So committee report ordinance.
Committee moves unfavorable action.
Second by Councilman Gephardt. Okay, any questions on PCO 15-19? Councilman Lattiser.
I have a right to make a motion.
We're going to take questions first, and then we'll entertain motions. Any comments or questions on PCO 15-19?
So, you, Mr. President, for clarification, I am looking for a motion to have discussion on the floor.
Yes, that's what we have right now. It's been moved. It's been second. We are now open for discussion.
Fine. May I have the floor?
Yes, Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you. So this is, as you know, PCO 15-19 sub A. And it's been an amended version, and it reads an item B, section 220, provided, however, that the following provisions shall be part of the health insurance benefits under collective bargaining agreements that commence after the effective date of this amendment to the ordinance, but shall not affect any collective bargaining agreement which is in effect at the time of this, of the effective date of this amendment to the ordinance. Now, some time ago, I asked for a fiscal note on this item. And first, I'm going to read the items from the charter pertaining to fiscal notes. Section 30-5, fiscal notes, accompaniment to ordinances and resolutions. At the request of the mayor, any member of the city council, an ordinance or resolution having an effect on the revenues, expenditures, or fiscal liability of the city shall be accompanied by a brief explanatory statement in note prepared by the finance department, which sets forth the estimated dollars effect thereof. Such statements or notes shall be known as fiscal notes, and when requested as above, shall accompany an ordinance or resolution prior to consideration by the council. Section 30-6, fiscal notes shall, whenever possible, cite effect and dollar amounts for the current fiscal year and estimates for the next two succeeding fiscal years. In the event that the fiscal effect commences or increases after this period, comments on such additional costs shall be required. No comment or opinion relative to the merits of the bill shall be included, excepting, however, that technical or mechanical defects may be noted. Third section, 30-7. Fiscal notes shall be returned to the Finance Committee of the City Council 7 days before the ordinance or resolution is to be considered by the Council. The response from the Finance Director says, the solicitor has advised the mayor that the provisions of the language in the proposed ordinance conflict with state law requiring that health benefits be negotiated with authorized city bargaining units. They also conflict with the right of retirees to retain the health benefits as well as the cost-sharing agreement that applied at the time of their retirement. For these reasons, and in compliance with Section 30-7 of the code, I am responding to the Finance Committee that there are no savings to project from the proposed ordinance. It is possible that the enactment could result in costs associated with unsuccessful litigation. The charter doesn't say anything about you don't have to provide a fiscal note if you think or you are advised that this won't pass the city council, or that it won't be supported by a Supreme Court or Superior Court position. It doesn't say anything like that. There's nothing that says if you have that crystal ball and you don't think the city council is going to pass it, for whatever reason, that you don't have to provide the fiscal note. I'm asking for a fiscal note on the proposed ordinance. It's a proposed ordinance. This ordinance has a significant dollar impact on the taxpayers. Significant. And I wasn't provided a fiscal note because the solicitor or solicitors said, in their opinion, this won't pass a court appeal. That's not what the charter says. It doesn't say this must be guaranteed it's going to be approved by the city council. It doesn't say it must be guaranteed that it'll stand up to a Superior Court appeal or a Supreme Court appeal or a federal appeal. It doesn't say any of that. The fiscal note, based on the intent of the charter, should be provided because the taxpayers have a right to know how much we're talking about. Now, what we currently have is we have co-pays of active employees which, by the way, keep on this number right here. At last count provided to me, as of June 30th, 2020, we had a total of 1,639 employees. This does not count the school department. 1,639. Of that, we have 964 retired employees. 964. Active employees, 675. In 2019, we had 1,561 active and retired employees. As of 2020, we have increased our retirees by 112. We've decreased our active employees by 34. Our unfunded healthcare liability is $383 million. That's the unfunded healthcare liability. $383 million. And that number comes from Danziger and Markoff on September 11th, 2020. In 2015, we had unfunded healthcare liability of $272,613,000. In 6 years, the unfunded liability has increased by $11 million in 6 years. I can remember coming to these council meetings long before I was elected in 2012 and hearing similar conversations and hearing varying forecasts and projections about where we would be in 2018 and 2019. But nobody wanted to listen. Nobody wanted to hear it. Because it's not a pleasant conversation to have. In the private sector, if you are paying some 47% of your healthcare costs to retirees and not active employees, you're going to be out of business. That was in 2004. The number is now active employees, 41% of our healthcare liability is paid to active employees. 59% is paid to retirees. Think about those numbers. 59%. So you have a situation where we have crossed that threshold where we now have more retirees than we have active employees. And we have retirees who are retiring with a much higher pension than the new people coming in. So there's more money going out and less money coming in. That's what's happening. In 2005, I got to shine a light on this. In 2005, our retired employee benefits were, I can't see it because I don't have the light, so bear with me.
Councilman, we'll give you a minute to find that. I'm going to ask if you could take a pause, if we can see if there's other members of the council that would like to be heard on this.
Well, I think, Mr. President, I think that I should be allowed to finish my presentation.
I'm just following the council rules. It's been a couple minutes over the 10-minute rule, so I do want to give everybody an opportunity to speak on this.
So we're talking about a multi-million dollar item here, and we're going to restrict conversation or input and sharing of facts to 10 minutes. When we're talking about an item,
we'll get a second opportunity, but there is 9 members of the city council. Mm-hmm. All have just as much right to speak on this as you.
Mm-hmm.
And we are following the council rules. I gave you over the 10 minutes, and I would like to hear from other members of the council. If no one else, after everyone else has their opportunity, there's a second opportunity for members of the city council to speak for the second time. You're allowed to speak then as well.
Fine.
And then we will take a vote. So one of the things I do want to say before we open up for the questions is the point of the that the councilman made on the fiscal note. I believe, Solicitor Walsh, you have an opinion on the fiscal note as well.
As it relates to section 30-5, 6, and 7 of the Code of Ordinances, it's up to the council for any determination as it relates to the sufficiency of the form and substance of the note that has been presented by the finance director. Everyone should have received this at a prior meeting in, I believe it was early December, if it wasn't late November, when this item was last presented for substantive context. So it would appear that section 30-7, as it relates to the timeliness of the presentation, it would be sufficient. As it relates to section 5 of the code, the finance director has presented, you know, a fiscal note that relies on a comprehensive memorandum outlining the various potential problems proposed by the changes, and in totality it presents a rationable case as to why the likely fiscal amount would be negligible, zero, or even potentially costly as it relates to litigation expenses. And as it relates to section 6, the content of that is expressed similarly. So if the councilman is raising a point of order, it would appear that the council president, who's chairing this, it is up to you whether you accept the sufficiency of the note itself.
Correct. So what the council solicitor is advising to the council at this time is that the provisions within the charter that Councilman Lattiser outlined have been met. The city has provided the city council with a fiscal note. The line right here that was dated to the chairman of the finance committee on November 2nd, 2021, in compliance with 30-70 of the code, I am responding to the finance committee that there are no savings to the project from the proposed ordinance. It is possible to enactment could result in costs associated with unsuccessful litigation. So that solves the fiscal note. It was asked, you can request the fiscal note, but you can't request what is in the fiscal note. It has been asked It has been requested, it has been responded in the timely manner according to the charter, and the fiscal note is there are no savings projected with this ordinance. So the fiscal note part of has been asked and answered, and it has been in the right way according to the ruling of the city solicitor. Are there any objections to that? I mean, I'm happy
Mr.
to
President,
take a vote on that.
I have a question for the solicitor. May I?
Just on the fiscal note.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So, Mr. Walsh, does the response from the finance director meet the intent of the charter? There is the spirit of the law and there's the intent of the law. Does it meet the intent of the law? And where in the charter does it say anyone has the right to speculate on the vote up or down as a reasoning for saying there is no fiscal savings? Where does it say that?
Councilman, I thank you for the question. And a longstanding principle in Rhode Island state law is that we are a black letter law state. And so intent, while informative, is non-binding as it relates to the determination. So all we can really look at is the what is presented in the text of the ordinance. And the body here is the chairman, in this case, we're in a meeting of the full body. Council president is the chair, and he is making a determination that it's what has been presented is sufficient in his opinion. And that's the ruling of the chair that has been presented, that all of the information presented and the timeline in which it was presented complies with the letter of the law as we can see it. And so at this time, that is, unless I'm speaking out of tune, the ruling of the chair.
So what we're saying here is that we have just set a precedence that at any time, any finance director in the city of Warwick chooses to use the reasoning or the rationale that I don't have to provide you with the numbers, with the facts and figures on this particular resolution or ordinance, because we don't think, the solicitor doesn't think that this is going to pass the city council, or it's not going to meet the pass or the appeal to a Supreme Court or a Superior Court. So that's what we're saying. We're saying that, okay, so let's just do this right out. From now on, going forward, you can use the reasoning for saying there's zero savings because I don't think it meets state law, because it's not going to stand up to an appeal in Superior Court or Supreme Court. Therefore, I'm not going to provide anything, but it doesn't have any bearing.
That is not what we're saying. We are saying that this particular fiscal note has qualified, has met the provisions in the charter. That is all we are saying. I will read the entire note so everybody knows what we're talking about here. Dear Councilman Al, this is dated November 2nd, 2021 to the chairman of the City Council Finance Committee. Pertinent to Warwick Code of Ordinance Section 30-527, a fiscal note has been requested on PCO 15-19. The city solicitor has advised the mayor that the provisions of the language is proposed ordinance conflict with state law requiring the health benefits be negotiated with authorized city bargaining units. They also conflict with the right of retirees to retain the health benefits as well as the cost sharing agreement that applied at the time of their retirement. For these reasons, and in compliance with 30-7 of the code, I am responding to the Finance Committee that there are no savings projected from the proposed ordinance. It is possible that enactment could result in costs associated with unsuccessful litigations. Respectively submitted, Peter A. Schaefer, Finance Director. At no point in this fiscal note does it talk about any proposed vote from the City Council, what their opinion is. He gave the answer of what is the fiscal impact that this ordinance would have, and the fiscal impact is none. So at this time, that is the ruling that I have made, that this fiscal note has qualified. And if there is a motion to object to that ruling, I'm happy to take a vote on that.
I object to it.
Okay, do we have a second to the objection? Are you seconding the objection?
That I am.
Okay. Questions on that, Councilman Ricks?
Thank you. Now, this seems, and apologies to my colleagues, but this is absolutely absurd. For an analogy here, let's say that we had an ordinance or we had a proposal before us, and instead of asking about savings, let's make this one a little bit different. Let's say that we have a proposal to double everybody's salaries. Sounds nice, but that's going to come with some costs. How about this? We ask for a fiscal note. What's it going to cost us if we double everybody's salaries? Now, what we would expect to get back from the finance director would be a calculation, some numbers. We'd expect to see, okay, what exactly is the cost of this? What we would not expect to see is speculation on the effects that might or might not happen because of a doubling of the salaries. We would not expect to get back as a fiscal note something that says, you know, it's not actually going to have a cost because everybody is going to be working twice as efficiently. Therefore, the cost is negligible or nothing. That would be patently absurd. Well, really, this is pretty similar. The finance director here in this fiscal note is not giving us the numbers. He's saying something else is going to happen as a result of this that's going to prevent the effect. And therefore, I'm not going to give you the numbers. The numbers are meaningless because it's not going to happen. Well, that's not what a fiscal note is. It might be a legal opinion, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't hear legal opinions. It could be a valid opinion. I'm not saying that the finance director is or is not ultimately right or wrong on what the effect of this particular proposed ordinance would be, but that's very different from what a fiscal note is. We're asking for a fiscal note, and as a council, this is a discussion that's very important for us to have. Regardless of whether you think that the current plans for retiree health care are sustainable or unsustainable, it's something we all have an interest in. For us to have that discussion, we need to know what things cost. For us to know what things cost, to have that data, we should have a fiscal note. What we have in front of us is not a fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on right now is just on the ruling on the fiscal note. Councilman Sanapi.
So I get what Councilman Riggs and Councilman Lattice are saying, but unfortunately it leads to absurd results. For instance, again, use an example. An ordinance saying the city takes possession and control of all the banks in the municipality. What's the fiscal note on that? Well, obviously, if we just go by sheer numbers, we're really getting a lot of money. However, it's obviously also quite illegal, a crime, etc. So when I think fiscal note, I want to know, at the end of the day, how much is the city going to get or lose? And that's what we were given by this note. At the end of the day, based on all the factors, not only is the city not going to get anything, we're probably going to lose. I get, again, Councilman Lattice and Ricks are saying, but that's not my interpretation of the requirements as it's written. That being said, still think that points out from the perspective of, but I want XYZ because it's still informative. My own recommendation would be amend the charter or ordinances to make it so that's the case going forward. But I think for the purposes of here and now, we were given what we should have been given. Again, I get that you wanted something else, and what the thing that you wanted makes sense, but my interpretation is, in my opinion, equally valid, if not more valid. So I think the finance director complied with his understanding of it. The solicitor seems to agree. Council president seems to agree. See, I agree, but let the vote be what it is.
Thank you. Councilman Gephardt.
Just in thinking through this and looking at section 30-6, I just had another question for the solicitor. Can you just give a brief interpretation of that last sentence there? Because I do hear what Councilman Ricks and Councilman Lattiser have said about, you know, a fiscal note when asked for should contain numbers and approximate costs, et cetera. But then there's this last section that says, accepting, however, that technical or mechanical defects may be noted. So what does that part mean? That's 30-6 in the charter.
So a plain meaning of the merits would be indicative of, the quality of being good or worthy. So I think the verbiage about it is essentially leading to the merits of if you think it's a proper proposal or not, which I don't believe is related to what was presented by the finance chair. He's not making a position that it's not a good or bad thing. It's about what its totality seems to be presenting. And, you know, moving further through that sentence raises questions about technical and mechanical defects. The various legal concerns presented in the memorandum and recited earlier could be determined to be that those are technical and mechanical defects of the law, of the changes presented in the ordinance itself.
Okay, Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. In response to the motion that's out there now, we've read this to nauseam, but I'm say it again. This is the last paragraph, second part of the third part of the first sentence. I am responding to the Finance Committee that there is no savings to project from the proposed ordinance. And then the next sentence is, it is possible that enacting could result the costs associated with the unsuccessful litigation. So there's an answer, and then there's a possibility. So I'm content with that. Thinking for and representing the taxpayers, myself as a taxpayer, the last thing I want to do is send the city into a litigation whirlwind. And I will take the advice of the city solicitor, a very well-experienced city solicitor. I will take the advice of our council solicitor, who worked very diligently with the administration, this council, and the city solicitor. And I will support your recommendation, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you. So at this time, there's been an objection to a ruling that I've made. So the clerk is going to call the roll.
Mr. President, excuse me.
I'm sorry. The clerk is going to call the roll.
I have another question.
You've already spoken on this.
Fiscal note.
I'm sorry. Your time is up. You have already spoken on this. We're going to have a vote on the ruling that you objected to, that this qualifies as a fiscal note. Then we will go back.
I would like to respectfully comment on
the fiscal
note.
I'm sorry. You have already commented. I am calling the vote. So a yes vote that we are calling right now is to affirm the chair's decision, the decision that I made that this in compliance with what advice from legal counsel that says that this fiscal note does qualify as a fiscal note and is ready to move forward. So a yes vote is to support the motion, the ruling that I made. So a yes vote is that the fiscal note, as on advice of counsel, qualifies as a fiscal note, and it has met all the criteria. So the clerk will call the roll on the objection. So a yes vote is to affirm the decision that the chair, which the council president, has made.
Ms. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
No.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
No.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes, 2 no.
Thank you. So now, going forward, we have already discussed the fiscal note. The fiscal note is in. It is qualified. There should be no more discussion on the fiscal note itself. It has been qualified. Are there any questions from members of the council who have not had a chance to speak on PCO 15-19? Anyone that has not had a chance to speak? Councilman Ricks. I'm sorry, Councilman Howe. I don't think Councilman Ricks has spoken on this part yet, though. So, Councilman Ricks.
I gladly yield to the previous called councilman. Thank you, Mr. President.
Excuse me. Thank you to the Council President. Thank you to Councilman Howell for yielding. First, I'll say that I think that this is a topic that we need to discuss now more than ever, because I believe it's been at least 2 years since the actuaries have come to us with updates. And certainly a lot has happened in 2 years that affects the financial outlook for the city. A lot of things that have been unexpected. Nobody really saw this pandemic coming, affecting the city and its finances and its future. Certainly not anything like we could have predicted. So I think that looking back several years ago to what the actuaries had presented, ever since I got on the city council a little over 5 years ago now, right about 5 years ago now, whenever the actuaries did come, they let us know that in terms of ensuring that we have the funds to pay for the obligations, promises that we have made to our city's employees in their contracts, that we are, quote, beyond the point of no return. And beyond the point of no return sounds pretty bad, but it's even worse in that when they're using it as a technical term, meaning that even if the city were to put in tax increases, maximum tax increases every single year of 4%, and use every single penny of those maximum tax increases to fund our obligations for health care for retirees, paying for that health insurance that the city has agreed to pay under the contracts and that we must pay under the contracts, then the city is still on the track to bankruptcy unless it makes some other major changes. And every year that passes, the liability keeps growing. We keep getting further into a hole, and it becomes harder and harder to dig ourselves out of it. It's going to become more and more painful to solve this problem. And so it's a problem where my looking at these numbers, listening to the experts, sure seems like we need to be finding a solution sooner rather than later to avoid more pain for everybody involved. We can't count on the federal government swooping in, expanding Medicare down to age 60 or age 55, and effectively bailing us all out. There's been talk about that sort of expansion for 30 years. It hasn't happened. We can't just count on the federal government or anybody else to save us. We have to come up with a plan to make sure that the city is honoring its contracts. Now, although I think that there are some good ideas that should be implemented through the collective bargaining process, I don't think that this legislation in its current form is our solution to this problem. One issue that stands out to me in particular is that this legislation in its current form would prevent any future employees, new hires, from having the benefit of health insurance in their retirement. Similar to what I've said in the past, when contracts for all of the collective bargaining units that come up before this council have come up for ratification, is that I do think that retiree health insurance provided by the city, whether it's for our active employees or new hires, or of course continuing our obligations under the contract, honoring those promises, I think that that is a great benefit. First, the contracts need to be honored. Second, I think that as to new hires, that's something that needs to be negotiated as part of the collective bargaining process between the union and the city. And I think that the solution, especially for the new hires and also for the active employees to make sure that this is being funded, is so that money is being put away. If we're not funding it, then how are we supposed to pay for it? If I was to come up to a city employee and say, hey, I have a great idea for the city to save money right now, let's stop funding the pensions. Well, that city employee rightfully should come back to me and say, hey, if you're not funding the pensions, then where's my pension going to be when I retire? Well, you know what? The city was actually doing that some decades ago with the Fire and Police One pensions. The city was not funding those pensions. The city had made a promise, but was not putting away the money for it. And now we are on a 40-year plan. We're most of the way through that 40-year plan, but we dug ourselves in quite a hole, and it is a real headache for us to try to climb out of that hole. We're now paying $20 million a year, which, if we had been funding that pension in the first place, we wouldn't be having to fund it now to the tune of $20 million a year. And continuing to fund it at those similar levels for a few years yet to come. Well, if we want to avoid getting in a similar hole, one that perhaps if we keep waiting, we might not be able to dig our way out of, we need to do something to address the problem. And I think it's in everyone's interest that we do something to make sure that these obligations, these promises, what the city has agreed to do under its contracts that it is bound to and it must honor, not just as a matter of legality, but as a matter of what is morally and ethically the right thing to do, the city needs to put away money to do that. And we also need our employees to come to the table and also, similar to the pension plans, how we solve that problem with a 40-year plan and creation of new pension plans that employees contribute towards. We need to make sure that everybody is stepping up to make sure that the city is going to have that money to honor its commitments. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Ritz. Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to kind of reiterate some of what I said at the previous comment, is that I count on the solicitors, and I count on our city solicitor. I count on the expertise of our council solicitor, and I asked a lot of questions on this. As was previously stated by you, Mr. President, this letter was sent to myself and this committee on November 2nd, and we've had conversation. And you know, the term that I hear used a lot nowadays is red flag. Well, if there was quite a few red flags brought up on this legislation, this is something that requires, as stated by state law and city law. I am not a lawyer, therefore I count on the people that are studied and gone through the process and have represent the city to tell us and to advise us, as does, I realize, as did our very qualified finance director, Mr. Schaefer, who went to the solicitor and requested information that ensure to back up his identifying. I will not be supporting the ordinance because, again, the last thing I want to do is set the city up, as the last thing I believe many don't want to do is set the city up for a long, drawn out, and finally useless litigation that'll just cost this the taxpayers, everyone included in this room as residents of the city of Warwick, so we are the taxpayers as well, a bunch of lawyers to tell us what has already been told. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Councilman. Any other members of the council that haven't had a chance to speak on this yet? Councilman Sanapi.
So on the bill itself, I'm not going to support it for the simple reason that it was labeled as unlawful by multiple solicitors at this point. It's just, it doesn't really bear any more discussion with me past that point. And then to touch on the whole, the actuary said it's past the point of no return. This keeps coming up, and I keep saying every single time, the way that is thrown about is incredibly misleading. Not how the actuary did it, because he clarified with more statements. But those statements aren't ever uttered by the people who say we're past the point of no return. And that's not restricted to this council. There's lots of people who come before us and say it too, as if it's the end of the world. Past the point of no return is if every single person in the city who's covered suffered a catastrophic medical injury, so example, all at the same time and needed all that care right then. That is not only preposterous, it's freaking impossible. It doesn't happen. We operate on a pay-as-you-go system, which means as an injury, as a need arises, you pay it. As the actuary said, our situation is not only not abnormal, in some places it's required to have it how we do. And in fact, we've now started to go above and beyond, as of the firefighter contract, by having OPEB benefits be paid in part by the employees, which before wasn't really happening. And to Councilman Latish's point, Councilman Ricks, that was a problem that it wasn't happening. The city started to rectify that. It's a good thing. It's great. And the more that happens, the more pay-as-you-go won't be a necessity. Instead, we can just have it be all in it under trust. And so nobody can use the numbers in a way that is, unfortunately, misleading to people. Because the average person has no reason to understand all the complexities of this. Heck, I didn't until the actuary came before us, and he got basically interrogated by all of us. It's very complicated. It's, to be honest, kind of a foolish system in the first place, but that's not our fault. And it needs to be recognized for what it is, not for what people try to make it out to be. Everyone can agree that contracts in the distant past were not wise. That's not up for discussion. Everyone can agree that it caused a burden on the city that shouldn't have existed. That's not up for discussion. These are all just clear facts. And everyone here can agree that the city has started to make strides to fix that. All those things are just facts. Not just the city, the unions too. This isn't just a one-sided deal. They have been actively helping. They have an interest in making this work. They work for us. It's a big deal. Our police force, one of the safest communities in the country, top 10, and arguably an unrivaled police force in the state, has a terrible problem getting members. And not because the old police are seen as bad everywhere. No, no, no. We get the people, they go through the academy, and then they get poached by another municipality, even as great as we are. And then putting forth something like this really just cuts them out at the knees, our department, who's already desperate to try to get new recruits and maintain the standards it has. And we can't just keep piling it on to them just because people in the past messed up. And again, it's not up for debate. We all agree there were mistakes in the past. But call them what they are, accurately portray them for what they are, and proceed accordingly. So I'm going to vote no.
Thank you, Councilman. Anyone else? Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So first, I want to go on the record saying that I believe we just violated our own charter. And I'm going to read into the record this item from our charter. And it says, no comment or opinion relative to the merits of the bill shall be included, excepting, however, that technical or mechanical defects may be noted. That's what the charter says, and that's not what we just did. Now, I don't know how many people in this room right now know who HILB Group is, H-I-L-B Group. Well, who they were was our healthcare advisors. And in 2019, the report that I have, based upon the proposed ordinance from the healthcare advisors, state this. The plan benefit and cost share change, projected annual savings, change benefit design to allow, align with the state. That's essentially what this is doing, by the way. This, for the most part, is mirroring the state's benefit package. We have healthcare benefits here in this city that the taxpayers are paying for that Fortune 5 companies do not have. We have a copay of $250, $500. We have a cap on prescription drug copays of $300 for a single plan and $600 for a family plan. I'd be willing to bet there isn't one person in this room working in the private sector that has anything like that. Prescription drugs are the lion's share or a large share of our healthcare costs. And we have a cap on prescription drugs of $300 for a single plan and $600 for a family plan. And if you think that's sustainable, well, you're entitled to your own opinion. Change benefit design to align with the state. This is back in 2019. By the way, when the healthcare costs then were $18,768 for a family plan. Today, I believe that cost is somewhere around $23,000. Back in 2019, a savings of increasing the copays would produce a savings of $2,519,629. Change effective employees co-share to a tiered arrangement based on the employees' annual incomes, $540,000. Add contribution for retirees tiered at 0% for less than $30,000 of retirement income benefits, 25% for 30 or more retirement benefits, which, by the way, the ordinance phases that in over a five-year period. Savings, $1,727,272. Add a contribution for post-65 retirees tiered at 0% for up to 30,000, 25% for 30,000 or more, $251,575. For a total savings in 2019 with the healthcare premium that is about $5,000 less than it is today for family health care, would have produced a savings of $5,038,589. These aren't my numbers. These aren't numbers I made up or pulled out of the sky or provided to me by a private citizen. These are numbers that are provided to me from the healthcare advisor to the city. In 2019, with a healthcare cost of $18,768 for a family plan, anyone who retired at the age of 40 with a 4% compounded annual trend increase in healthcare, which I think we'll agree on this, that it certainly has been much different, would incur a cost of $306,466 per person. You can talk about what we can do currently, and you can talk about what we can do in the future. If you sit here and do nothing and allow this snowball to continue to grow, it's going to grow to a point where someday your conversation that's going to take place in this chamber is going to be much different. Now, back in 2008, when someone else said that, nobody believes it and said, it's ridiculous, it'll never happen. Forget it, those numbers are skewed, they're not true. Well, the numbers that we're looking at today are the very numbers that were talked about then. Pay as you go means you pay the bill. You get the bill, you pay it. It doesn't mean that you pay millions of dollars in interest because you don't reduce the principal. We're not paying as we go. If we were, we wouldn't be sitting here with last year's numbers of a $383 million unfunded liability. So it's quite clear where the vote is going to go on this, and that's fine. And you're all entitled to your own positions and your own opinions, and you're all entitled to your own vote. This issue must be addressed. When you start having the cost of health care, the trend cost, leaving you with a small percentage left to do anything else, where the hell do you think you're going to get the money to build schools, to pay for sawtooth buildings, to buy trucks, to buy fire equipment, to buy garbage trucks? Where do you think this money is going to continue to go? When you are spending the lion's share of the revenue in one arena, healthcare. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not sustainable. Believe me, don't believe me, take the position that was taken in 2008. But eventually, somebody's going to be making a very difficult decision. And I want to be on the record that I am doing what I can do to try and curtail that from happening by bringing the future costs, if nothing else, the future costs of healthcare to the taxpayers in line with what's happening with the rest of the state. We talked about lifetime healthcare. Teachers don't get lifetime health care. They don't get any health care when they retire. There's 990 teachers. They don't get anything when they retire. In the private sector, you walk out the door, with your briefcase and see you later. There's no lifetime health care. And why isn't there? Because you would never survive. In the private sector, you would never survive. So this will have its future or its demise tonight. But it's a conversation that needs to be continued. And it's an issue that the taxpayers can't not continue to pay for. As Councilman Ricks mentioned, we can't raise taxes enough to pay for this. You can raise taxes 8 million change a year. That's it. Go to the taxpayers and tell them you're going to raise the taxes 8 million a year just to pay for healthcare costs. And see what they want to say about that. It's not sustainable. Taxpayers cannot continue to shoulder this cost without more contribution. Mr. President, I can go on for another hour. I'm not going to do that at this time. So those are the issues. That's how I see it. And that's what I'm hearing from my constituents, as well as many others.
Thank you very much, Councilman. Oh, okay. The bottom line is this ordinance is not done in the correct form. The City Council cannot legislate things into collective bargaining agreements. The administration and the collective bargaining unit have to negotiate what is in a contract. That is the proper way to address these changes. So this PCO has been moved unfavorable and has been second. So the clerk will call the roll for unfavorable action on PCO 15-19 sub A.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
No.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes, 1 no. Unfavorable.
Thank you. PCO 15-19 sub A is unfavorable. We now move on to new business. PCO 39-21, committee report ordinance.
Committee recommends favorable action.
For action, if you can move that for me, Councilman Sinapi.
I move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Howe, Councilman Foley, Councilwoman Travis. Any questions that were not asked during committee earlier this evening? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes, favorable action.
Thank you. PCO 39-21 passes. Next up is PCR 156-21, a resolution authorizing amendment of the lease of the City of Warwick in AAA Northeast. Committee report, public properties.
Recommend favorable action.
Can you move that for me, Councilman Ricks?
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley, Councilman Howe, Councilwoman Travis. Any questions that were not asked during the committee earlier this evening? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes, motion passes.
Thank you, the motion passes. We are now moving to unanimous consent. First up is PCO 40-20, an ordinance in regards to allowing municipal retirees to return to work on a limited basis without interrupting their pension benefits. First question is, there is any objection to hearing this under unanimous consent from members of the council? Hearing no objection, we will move forward. Is there a motion for second passage on PCO 40-21? Motion by, your motion, sir, Councilman Foley. Favorable action, second by Councilman Howe. Any Councilman Gephardt? Thank you. It's been moved and second. Are there any questions from members of the council? Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. I have one question with regard to this. As I said before, I'm in complete support of it. I think it's a very good idea, and it's necessary. You can't get people today, period. But my question is, what would happen if someone were injured on the job? Has that been discussed?
I believe that is a very good question, and I believe that has that was part of the personnel director who presented this. He went through all of that. I don't believe he's here, but Councilman Gephardt, have you?
I did ask the question to Mr. Rotundo. I do have a written response. I don't know if it would be helpful to read it.
You said what?
I did ask the question to Mr. Rotundo. He didn't get into it in the last meeting, but I asked him as a follow-up. I do have a written response if you'd like me to read it into the
record. Yeah, if you have an answer, sure.
You got the answer. Okay.
Sure. So I asked the same question to Mr. Rotundo, and so here's the response. Councilman, the city is responsible for persons injured while working. We are self-insured. Bringing on additional staff does not, standing alone, increase costs. We do not pay premiums. If someone is injured while working, we will pay medical and weekly indemnity payments if they're unable to work for more than 3 days. Our experience with regular part-time employees and temporary seasonal employees has been very favorable in this regard. There are other reasons to take comfort. We are only responsible for replacement wages, which will be minimal and may be offset by pension income. Stephen, Director Rotundo. So that's the response to that question.
So thank you for that. And that is a very good response, because the key here is we're self-funded. So in my world, workers' comp is assigned a percentage of premium for whatever your wages are. So whether you pay someone $1 or $100, you're paying a percentage of workers' comp. That's not the case here, because it's self-funded. And which means that if there is no injuries, there are no claims. So there is no difference whether we bring in someone from another community, another state, to drive a snowplow truck, drive the fire truck, to, you know, plow, do whatever it is that the administration needs those people to do. It does not make a difference with respect to workers' comp, because the only claim you pay is the claim that occurs. So that's the question that I had, and the answer makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Lattison. Councilman Gephardt with the answer. Any other questions? This was under unanimous consent, so I do want to make it available to members of the public if any members of the public would like to speak on PCR 40-21, second passage. Hearing none. Councilman Ricks, sorry, I missed you. You're way in the back there.
Thank you. No problem. I mean, I do think that there could be potentially some differences as to former city employees coming out of retirement on this versus persons who did not previously work for the city. Speaking from my experience with the workers' compensation system, it's an area where I've had some experience in private practice, both on the employee and employer side, as well as previously working as a judicial clerk for a one-year term clerkship at the Rhode Island Workers' Compensation Court. The general principle with workers' compensation being that it's compensation for lost wages, and part of that principle being that if someone is retired, then they would not generally receive indemnity benefits, meaning the weekly benefits. That's, of course, separate from other types of benefits, such as the medical benefits, any payment for loss of use, scarring, that sort. But those latter types of benefits would apply regardless of whether the person is coming out of retirement, doing some work subject to this particular program or not. That applies to anybody who's hurt at work. So with this in particular, there could be some matter of decision where the person who's injured has some ability to choose their remedy depending on their intent, whether that intent is, even though they're retired from work with the city, if their intent is to continue to be in the workforce. But especially if we're talking about folks who are retired from work with the city and taking a look at what the benefits packages of the pension are versus what the workers' compensation benefits are, my sense of it is that generally speaking, the pensions are probably typically, and this is something that the personnel director would really be the proper person to confirm, but it is my general understanding that the pension and retirement packages in that regard are probably more generous than the workers' compensation benefits. And so we probably, for those very few people who hopefully know people called back under this program, require workers' compensation benefits. But I would imagine that most would, if the pension benefits are the more lucrative, they would probably opt for the pension benefits rather than less generous workers' compensation payments. That's my comments on that, and I would tend to agree with the conclusions of Councilman Lattiser and Gebhardt for those reasons.
Thank you, Councilman Ricks. It has been moved in second, and the public has had an opportunity, Council. So the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gebhardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser? Yes. Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Nine yes.
The motion passes. Thank you. Second passage. Next up is PCR 3-22, a resolution relative to traffic studies. This is an annual resolution. Again, first question is there any objections to hearing this under unanimous consent at this time? Okay, hearing none, we will now hear this motion. This is a resolution relative to traffic studies. We have to vote on this every year, allows the council to request traffic studies from the police department. Committee report, Councilman Foley. There is no committee report, but you have a recommendation. It's been moved and seconded by Councilman Howe and Councilman McElroy, Councilwoman Travis. Is there any questions on this? Again, this is an annual resolution that allows the city council to make requests for traffic studies. Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Oh, I'm sorry, and this wasn't you. Excuse me, Madam Clerk, my fault. It is under unanimous consent, so it was not in committee. So are there any members of the public that would like to speak on this? Any members of the public? Okay, hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gebhardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Nine yes, motion passes.
Thank you, the motion passes. Next up, again, under unanimous consent, is PCR 4-22. This is a resolution on congratulations and condolences. Again, this is an annual resolution that we pass. Councilman Ricks.
Request favorable action.
Second by Councilman Howe and Councilman Foley, Councilwoman Travis. Yes, my first question, of course, is there any objection to hearing this under unanimous consent? No objections. We'll do it one more time. Councilman Ricks, can I have a motion?
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley, Councilman Howe, and Councilwoman Travis. Okay, is there any questions on this? Again, this is an annual resolution authorizing the City Council to do resolutions of congratulations and condolences. Any questions for members of the public? Any questions for members of the public? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gebhardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks? Mr. Snappy? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Nine yes, motion passes.
Thank you, the motion passes. Number four this evening is PCR 5-22, a resolution in regards to erecting stop signs. First question is, this is unanimous consent. Any objections to hearing this under unanimous consent at this time? Hearing none, we will hear this motion. Councilman Lattiser, do you have a motion on PCR 5-22?
Move favorable action on PCR 5-22.
Second by Councilwoman Travis, Councilman Howe, Councilman Foley. Are there any questions or comments on this?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have had a traffic study done on this particular item, and it's come back favorable action. So I would respectfully request favorable action on PCR 5-22.
Excellent. Any questions for members of the council? Any questions for members of the public on PCR 5-22? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gebhardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Nine yes, motion passes.
Thank you very much. Ward 1, anything to docket under unanimous consent? Ward 2?
Pass.
Ward 3?
Pass.
Ward 4?
Pass.
Ward 5?
Pass.
Ward 6?
Pass.
Ward 7 passes. Ward 8? Ward 9?
Pass.
Councilwoman Travis.
If there be no further business of this honorable body, I move to a docket session.
Any objections? To all in favor of moving to docket session?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any objections? Any abstentions? We are now moved into the docket session. Ward 1, anything to docket this evening? Ward 2?
Pass.
Ward 3?
Pass.
Ward 4?
Pass.
Ward 5?
Yes, Mr. President, I have one. It's a resolution and the tentative title is Resolution Relative to Supporting Reforms of Healthcare Insurance Benefits and Future Collective Bargaining Agreements.
We're going to go intergovernmental. Anything else at docket Ward 5?
Sorry?
Is that your only thing?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Ward 6?
Pass.
Ward 7 passes. Ward 8?
2-1. Ordinance regarding notice the city and its communities when emergency relief appropriations will or are likely to alter the use or fundamental nature of a property within the city.
That will be intergovernmental as well.
The other,
ordinance.
Okay. The other will be a resolution to the General Assembly regarding notice to and financial support of municipalities and communities when emergency relief appropriations will or are likely to alter the use or fundamental nature of a property and potentially negatively impact the municipality and or community in which the property is located.
That one we will put in intergovernmental. Ward 9.
Pass.
And that is it this evening. Thank you very much, everyone. Happy New Year, and we will see you in a couple weeks.
Have a good one.